Welcome to the City Lights Church podcast. Wherever you are, whatever you're doing today, we hope this message inspires you to follow Jesus. You can find out more about City Lights Church at city-lights.church.
Now, this morning we have a special treat, and I'm going to invite to the stage. We're doing an interview. And I'm going to invite Jeffrey as he comes to share a little bit about his story. So why don't you welcome him as he does that? You can turn to the person next to you while we're setting up and give them a huge smile. And just as we get comfy, it's not often we get to sit on a super comfy chair, so I just might enjoy this moment. So at City Lights, we love hearing people's stories. And today we have the privilege of hearing from Jeffrey and share his story. So Jeffrey and his wife Mags have two amazing boys. They're coming up, their family's coming up. Spencer and Jalen, and I reckon those boys, they're going to be world changers, huh? They got energy, they got life, and we absolutely love this family, love having them part of our church. And so today, I'm going to ask a bunch of questions and hear your journey, so welcome.
Awesome. Can you hear me? Can you hear me out there?
Yeah. Is that working?
All right, yep.
Yeah.
First, thanks for having me up here. I'm a little bit nervous, but I mean, if I can play in front of thousands of people, then I can talk to church. So that's good.
That's good. That's good. So tell us a little bit about what it was like growing up for you. At some stage, you were early childhood in Wellington. Was there anywhere before that, or family? Tell us about family, brothers, sisters, the whole deal.
All right, the whole shebang, eh? I'm an older brother, so I've got a younger sister. She's 4 years younger. Mum and dad in Wellington, born and raised in Wellington, New Zealand. Porirua, to be specific. It's kind of like, it's pretty much like Logan. So I grew up in like an area like Logan, represent, you know, so in the hood. And that's all good, you know. But I'm half Samoan and half New Zealand European, so my mum is brown. A lot of people think when my mum comes to Australia, they think it's Mag's mum. So I have to correct and say, nah, that's actually my mum. I am half brown, but as you can tell, I'm complexity and I'm working on it. my dad is New Zealand European. So I grew up out in the hood and I very much was raised by a village, so to speak. Coming from an islander background, I was more so raised on my Samoan side. So my mum has, she's one of 13. And back in the 60s, they got busy, you know, so no iPads or iPhones or anything, you know. So, she's one of 13. So I was genuinely raised by my aunties and I have a lot of cousins. So because I only have one sister, I have like, there's different generations within my family. So there's six of us that kind of, the boys that were kind of born in the same kind of era or around that. So those are like my brothers. I have six brothers, like younger brothers, and we all kind of, grew up together, so to speak. So,
went to school and that out there, so we can get into that or whatever,
Tell us about the first time you ever went to church. What was going on for you at that time in your life? And
the first time I went to church, because of my islander background, my nana went to a very traditional Pacific Island church. It's called PIC in our neighborhood, and my mum took me along. I can understand Samoan, but I can't speak it, so I'd go along. And it was in Samoan, and I was younger, so I didn't really know what was going on. And they talk about Jesus, and then hand around the money containers, you know. And I'm like, what is this like? So, and I see everyone chucking your money. My mum would always give me like 10 cents, 20 cents to just chuck in. But I put my gum in it. Like, I thought it was like, you know, like in the offering container.
And then obviously later found out, you know, there's the offering container and da da da. But yeah, that was my first introduction to church. It was very religious, and that's what I thought it was because it's our culture. I just thought it's part of our culture. It's what we do. You go to church on a Sunday, you have a big feed afterwards, and then it's based around family, you know. So my understanding of church was religion. And then and from what I saw around with everyone else going to church, you know, you go to church on a Sunday and that's what you do. But because my dad, he's not a Christian, I had the option sometimes to just, you know, not go. So yeah, I just would chill with my dad, or mum would go, or and then we moved to the city, and we didn't really go to church as much. Yeah, but
and then one day you got invited by friend somewhere.
Yeah,
yeah.
So in high school, I used to row, and I was on the rowing team just for fitness, for a bit of fitness in high school, and I think I was like would have been equivalent to the year 10 or year 11. Oh, year 10. And then my mate, he's like, "Oh, bro, do you wanna come to this rave on Friday?" I'm like, "Yeah, raves were the thing, you know, like not a party or anything. It was a rave." So I was like, "Yeah, man, any hot girls there?" And he's like, "Yeah, girls, guys, whatever. Like, it's good, man. Like, real low key, just like chill." I'm like, "Yo, I'm in." I go along, and it's pumping, like in a hall like this, and it's a stage, and like bright lights flashing and stuff like that. Music, people are dancing, like teens are dancing in the front. I'm like, "Yo, this is cool." It's like, he was right. There's some hot girls here, you know, like. And then it transitions into slow music. And I was like, and then I pay attention to the screen, and then it says hallelujah on the screen. And I go to my mate, I'm like, "Bro, what is this?" And he goes, "Oh, bro, this is my youth group." And I was like, oh, wow, like youth can be this, like this. Yeah. Like, I was blown away. And it was, turns out it was like a Pentecostal youth group, very much Jesus was alive. And like, that's kind of like the first sense of like something different, like in terms of church. Because my view of church was religion. Like, you go to church on a Sunday, it's very, you sit in your chair, you listen to the preacher, you know. But it was, this youth group was something different. It was alive, it was energetic. There were hot girls, you know, like, and then I actually met Mags that night, so don't worry about that, you know. It worked, you know. My mate, holla, your boy, Finn. But yeah. So, and that was my introduction to, like, yeah, like church in that aspect. Yeah.
And so what happened in the next kind of like couple of years after that?
So then I meet Mags. And I get saved that night, not radically saved, but I give my heart to the Lord. And then both Mags had been in church. That's its own story, but we meet at a youth group, and then we're like in and out of church. So I'm like, for the next wee while, most weeks I'm finding myself giving my heart to the Lord. "Oh, anyone want to repent?" "Oh, yep." So I think, I was just, doing the youth thing because it was so new and cool. And then I just, what they call backslide, you know, you just go and you do your thing at church, and then I'd go and be of the world again, you know, like, not that I was a big partier, but, you know, sometimes I want to drink in the weekends after rugby, you know, I was in the first 15 and stuff, I was captain and doing all this stuff, popular and all this, and I had a new girlfriend and it was cool, and like, it was Mags, she was a bad influence, but nah, just kidding. We both were bad. We'd be like, some like Friday nights, for example, because it was youth on Friday, we'd be like, should we go to youth, or should we just get fish and chips and just chill, you know, because like we're just mucking around. And then we'd turn up to church on a Sunday, sometimes hungover or just like kind of an empty shell, really, because we've been there, done that. And then I'll just get into it. Yeah. And then in 2010, this is kind of like we're in the transition of youth into like young adults. So I've done the youth thing now. I'm kind of transitioning into uni. So there's kind of a gap for Mags and I, like where you're in limbo after school, you know, because you got youth, but you're too old for youth now. And then the young adults program, you feel like you're not quite in young adults because you got the word adult in it. So it's like you're in limbo.
So then Max and I are doing our own thing. 2010, we've been there, done that, right? We're still good friends with the youth pastor. He's still an amazing guy, Levi Mary Church. And Levi invites me to youth, to conference, this conference that we're having at church, held in the big town hall in Wellington. And I was like, oh, just be polite. Like, yeah, I'll go along. Yeah, sweet. Like, it's my mate. He gets me to sit on the front row. I'm like, sweet. This pastor, anyone heard of Reggie Dabbs before? Yeah, Reggie Dabbs. He's amazing. He's an American preacher, very much a youth speaker, and has an amazing story and testimony. And he gets up, and I'm there in a hall full of maybe 300 teenagers. And so I'm kind of like, remember, I'm in limbo. I'm like a bit older than these guys. Feel like, what am I doing here type thing. But also I'm here out of respect and I want to hear a cool story. So I'm like, I sit there. He does this whole preach. He preaches this awesome word on wanting the cross. And he says at the end, if you want the cross, I want you to stand up and yell, I want the cross. And I'm sitting there. I'm like, oh yeah, awesome. That's a great word. Like, cool, man. Very motivational speech. Yeah. Sweet. And this dude, no word of a lie, he gets up. He's like, I want the cross, like that. And I look back and I'm like, what the heck? Like, and this is one guy, another person stands up, I want the cross. Another, very dramatic, you know? I'm like, this is dramatic. Like, yeah. Oh my gosh. I'm like, oh, cringe. But then it's like, yeah, you know? Another kid, I want the cross. Honestly, next thing I know, I'm on my knees in the front row. I'm on my knees and I'm weeping and I'm just repeating, I want the cross. And I weep and I open my eyes. I realize, oh, what a this guy. But I realize that the Holy Spirit has dropped me to my knees and he's just, yeah, I'm just surrendered to his presence. And it's the first time that had ever happened. Remember, I've been there, done that. And then I just remember, just saying, I want the cross. Like, I want the cross genuinely from my heart. Like, I want the cross. And I'm weeping. And I'm like, man, I'm supposed to be this tough rugby player, you know, all this. And in that moment, I gave my heart proper to the Lord, you know. And I was telling Andrew when we caught up, I don't know if it was a vision or a picture, but it was probably a picture from God that, it was a very pivotal time for me in terms of my career. So I hadn't made it yet in terms of going on to be a professional rugby player. This is pre that. So I just finished the New Zealand Under-20s World Cup, won the World Cup with the 20s, so Junior World Cup, won that. So I've had a taste of what it looks like. Then in that moment, God had shown me a picture of like, you need to draw a line in the sand whether you're going to stand for me or not. And there's that scripture, you know, if you're lukewarm, I will spit you out. And this is what I learned later. But in that moment, I was like, yo, I'm gonna make a genuine stand for God. Keeping in mind, I've been there, done that. So I've heard the words, I've heard the scriptures. I know what to say. I know how to do church. I know how to be a youth leader. I know how to put it on. But the genuine conviction in my heart wasn't there until that moment. And that's when I realized, like, I'm going to make a stand for God. And that didn't mean, I didn't know what that looked like at the time, but yeah. The great thing about that testimony or my testimony, which God did, was Mags got saved at the conference at the same time, but in a different, seminar. So we had our own conviction for ourselves. So because I think we'd done it together, we'd like heavily, you know, we influence each other. And there was a moment where we both found our own relationship with Jesus, which is very important, especially for guys, because we're easily swayed, I feel like, especially young guys, you know. But I definitely feel like, yeah, that was a pivotal moment for not only for me and my relationship with Jesus, but my relationship with Mags. So yeah, I told Mags, oh look, I got to stop sleeping over, you know, because I'd go sleep at her house because I had training in the city. I was like, oh, you know, we got to stop sleeping together. it's just everything, like even alcohol. I was like, oh, before going into my professional scene, oh, when I signed my contract. So the following year, fast forward, I signed my first professional contract, and I made a decision not to drink any alcohol for the first 2 years of my career. Not so much more, not so much to be like, I'm holier than thou, you know, but more for me. And it was that picture of the line in the sand. Okay, how can I do this in my career? Rugby is very much influenced by, it's a rock and roll lifestyle, you know, sex, drugs and rock and roll. Like that's genuinely what it is. You're put on a pedestal as this professional, NRL, union, any professional sport. So that moment on my knees when God showed me the picture, you know, it started the journey for me to, yeah, pave my own way in this professional world. That's pretty crazy, but also awesome and exciting. So that's, yeah, my kind of story. Yeah, yeah.
Awesome. Super exciting. So after that moment, there was a lot of things going on in your life. That's you and Mags got married soon after that. How did you propose?
Oh, man. Okay. You want to go there?
Yeah.
How did I propose? Okay. So, like, I actually learned to play the piano.
Oh.
Hey. So there's a song called
There's
Heaven.
A piano here.
Oh, it's been years. Actually, where's Max? No. I actually learned a song called Heaven by Jamie Foxx, and I learned to play that.
Mm.
The strategy was, okay, have a fight with Mags in the morning, and then, because I had training, and I didn't want her to hang out with me after. Yeah, so I probably pushed it too far. I rock up to her house. We have an argument. Great. She throws a dumbbell at me. I'm not even kidding. Boom. There's a small dumbbell at me. Boom. I'm like, sweet. It worked. But also, are we going to be together after this? So she doesn't want to hang out. I finished. It's my last day of preseason for the Hurricanes. First year contract. I'm like, sweet. I go back to her place. She's living in the city. I set up like a rose petal, you know, like a, what's it called? Path to the lounge area. I've got the piano set up in there, like a little keyboard, and candles everywhere. Mm. Keep the candles in mind.
Yeah.
Candles, like candlelit room, you know, everywhere. My best mate, he helps me out, set everything up. And his partner at the time is Mag's, like, hey girl, how are you? You know, oh, did you have a fight or something like that? You know, like da 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 da. So she's like, yeah, oh, he's better. Bleep, 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 whatever, you know, like, and then let's hang out. So she takes Mags away, and then they hang out after. To get Mags back to the house, I didn't think about that. Like, how have a fight, sweet, easy. But how do I, you know, mend this fight? This is what I do. Babe, are you all right? Are you all right? This is her. This is me. Oh, I've been in a car crash. Oh, what? Where are you? I said, oh, it's in front of your house. He's like, oh. Meanwhile, her friend is in the background like, what's going on? What's going on? Do we need to go? Do we need to go now? Already like, because she knows what's happening, right? So then, yeah, Chelsea's like, okay, well, let's go, let's go. And Meg's like, oh, yeah, let's go. Meg, Jeff's been in a car crash. I said, oh, no, it's just a fender bender, blah, blah, blah. Like, something small, but car crash, who is this guy? Anyway, I'm like, okay, yeah, I'll see you soon. She's like, you're right. I'm like, yeah. Yo, bro, we're on. Let's go.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
So we do everything. Anyway, she gets to the house. She rushes to the door, and I'm like panicked. Goes through the front door. Boom! Like bursts through the front door. Goes, skips all the rose petals and stuff. Like straight to the and then she kind of realizes straight to the lounge. And keep in mind the candles. I am sweating because it's hot. All the candles, I didn't realize it's like hot as. She comes in and my bro is already crying. Like he starts crying before her behind Mags. And I'm like trying not to laugh, but also like think. Then I see Mags and I start and I'm like, and I'm like, oh, wait, let me start again. And then I get into the song and then I propose and then finish and then she says yes. And that's the story. So that's how I proposed. She said, yes, we go out to dinner after.
Come on.
Yeah.
That's the wildest proposal I've ever heard.
Oh, and then I had to scrape out the candle from the carpet because it melted into the floor.
So yeah, it's, yeah, good that's memories, eh, baby?
That's a good
nice.
One.
Yeah. She said yes, and she's all here. So
that's fantastic. So you've had a long rugby career so far, not over yet.
Yeah, not over yet. So, yep.
115 games for the Hurricanes.
118.
Yep. 118 for the Hurricanes. Yep. I'll update Wikipedia.
That's a, yeah.
This is the
that's a young JTA right there. Yeah.
Right there. And then you went overseas, played in England for the Wasps, also for Ulster in Northern Ireland. And then you had the opportunity to play for the All Blacks and Samoa. And also recently for the ANZAC 15.
Oh, yeah.
So you've had some great kind of opportunities. What's like one or two things that you've loved about doing what you do as a job?
Oh, man. I think now, when I first started, it's like obviously achieving your childhood dreams, you know, you want to. I'm very goal oriented, so I set these goals and I cracked it. I think the realization of actually making it after setting the goals, that was huge. But I think now being older and having been around for a while, one of the best things about being a professional is my son. Mm. Seeing my son see me play rugby. Mm. One of the highlights of my career ever. It's not the accolades. You know, I've won a Super Rugby Championship, played for the All Blacks, played for Manu Samoa, ANZAC. These are great things. But genuinely, like, I'd say this to everyone. People ask me, what's the highlight? And I say, the moment my son, my oldest son, realized what I did for a job. Mm. Because we're in Ulster. He would have been six. Meg's like, six. I'm like, yeah. How old is he now? He's six and he's in his class and everyone, because I'm just dad. Like I go home, I'm just dad. You know, like as we all are, we're just dad. Your kids don't care about what you do for a job. They just care about where their next meal is and if they're changing their bum or or where their next meal is because of the boys. But my son was six and then, and I got this, I should have got the photo, but he come up to me after my game and he asked me for my signature. And I was like, genuinely, like you guys, like what? But then I realized, like he realized that I played professional rugby, and I was this guy that all his friends see me as, but he never saw me as that. And then he finally realized, oh, my dad is actually like, you know, Ari Savea. Like that's who he realized, like. And that was a great highlight for me, like as a professional. And that's why I do it. But when I was in early days, it's definitely just achieving those goals that I set out to achieve. And follow through what I said I'd do.
So you've talked a little bit about like, you know, that line in the sand. Mm. Professional sport is often thought of one of the more difficult environments to still maintain a strong faith and a commitment to who you are. As a follower of Jesus. So what's like one or two things that you've learnt that could be helpful for us, even in wherever we are in the different environments that we are?
Yeah, I think it's important to understand that it's a journey. You're never at your final destination in faith. You're always growing, you know. If you stop learning, you stop growing. And I feel like whether you work in Flip Burgers at McDonald's, or you're a professional athlete, or you're a doctor or a surgeon, you can show your faith in different aspects. And you don't have to bubble bash to show your faith. You know, there's times that opportunities will present themselves for you to, not bubble bash, but what I mean by that is to share the gospel. And I'm very much, in my line of work, your actions speak louder than your words. So the way that I lead my life and the way that you lead your life is a great example of the way that you show your faith. And understand that, you know, it's okay not to be perfect. You know, because I'm in the limelight, in the spotlight, a lot of us professional rugby players or professional athletes in general, you know, we're in the limelight. You know, you see certain players on the news for doing silly things all the time or doing all these things. But I think, like, it comes, you know, it comes with great responsibility. Like this
this, you know, fame or whatever, you have a lot of responsibility. And I feel like going back to your question about, you know, walking this faith journey is just understanding that it's just a journey. Like, that's what it is. You know, and you don't have to be perfect to show the gospel, like, you know, show it through kindness and love and yeah, the simplicity of Christianity in my mind is just loving God and loving people. You know, people will always let you down, but God will never let you down. And I feel like his love is honest and true and pure. And I feel like if we can get closer to that and we show that, then, you know, we'll have better people, you know? So just those two things, man. I was telling Andrew, like, the way that we run our household in my house is those two things. Mags and I, that's the foundation, is loving God and loving people. And understand people aren't perfect, and that's fine. But God is. So if I love people, love God, then I will love people the same way he loves me. And like, I might seem like a very extroverted person, very people person, but I learned that. I learned it through the foyer, like church foyers. I learned that because, you know, rugby, everyone always wants to talk to you, always wants to, and that's cool, like I don't mind. But I used to be standing at the back, too cool, very much like I'm this rugby guy, or be shy, like, oh, don't talk about, I don't want to talk about rugby or this or my job or the game I played last night and how amazing I was and da da da. Be humble, you know? But I learned through loving God and then loving people. Loving God is just about showing love to what they love, you know? And it's the best way that I can show my love for God. I think so those are the foundations, love God, love people. Then in my household, my family is my first ministry. So my kids, my wife and my kids, myself, that is our first ministry. And the second ministry, table. So what I mean by the table, the ministry at the table, Jesus, he sat with the sinners, right? You know, he got people around the table and people judged him for doing so. But those are the people, the empty seats in church, that's what church is for, not for the saved. It's for the lost. And the table is where Mags and I, you know, you share food, you break bread, you share laughter and stories and life. And church isn't confined to the four walls of a building, you know? And that comes down to, again, if it trickles down, it's just loving God and then loving people. That's the simplicity of it. And I get quite frustrated or annoyed with people in a professional world, like not doing those simple things, making it complicated. And then that's when it gets misconstrued in terms of when I was younger, that religion. You know, but it's not as simple. So, awesome. Yeah, I hope that encourages someone. Yeah.
Absolutely. So let's talk a little bit about fatherhood. Let's maybe start with
let's go
with your, you know, your relationship with your dad.
Oh yeah,
yeah. Oh. And what was that like?
It was a tough one. Not when I was younger, but long story short, my mom and dad split when I was in my last year of high school, and that changed my relationship with my dad very much so. There was a moment, though, when I was younger, I was telling Pastor Andrew, that I had this rugby trip, you know, when I was younger. I had this rugby trip, and I think mom and dad were going through some stuff, but I didn't know. I left class early. I was telling all my class, yo, I'm going to this trip, representative footy. You know, and I leave at class at 2 and school finishes at 4:15. I'm waiting for him at the end of the driveway, and an hour passes. At 15, all my classmates are leaving and I'm like, oh, snap. Real embarrassed. He's forgotten to come pick me up, to take me to the ferry to go and do this thing. I end up catching the bus home and walking home. He comes screeching around the corner, pulls and get in the car. And I'm like, oh. Did I do something wrong? Like, you forgot me, man. And I was like, my heart was broken. And I think in that moment, he was just frustrated at himself, but he kind of took it out on me a little bit because he was like, why'd you catch the bus? You know, why are you walking home? Da, da, da. And in that moment, that was when my heart broke for my dad. My relationship kind of broke a little bit. And then mom and dad they split. And then my sister was very much a daddy's girl. I'm a mama's boy. So, you know, I became the head of the house with my sister, looking after my mom. Well, not that she needs looking after, but, you know, just a responsibility as a young man in the house, and especially in the Samoan culture, you got to look after the woman in your house. So, you know, I do that. Dad's, you know, he's doing his thing, gets a new missus quite quick, and it's just hard, you know, a bit of tension, which is natural, you know. I see a lot of nodding heads. It's just friction. But I realize, and Mags helps me through it a lot, like forgiveness, you know. So I forgive my dad, long story short, I forgive my dad, and we have a great relationship now. But it's through understanding the love of the father that I have that. And I think, you know, I only get one dad, you know, and understanding that I only have one dad. And you only ever get one dad. And I felt like, oh, that was a realization for me to really mend that. And so we're in a good spot now. Like, there's still rough patches and stuff, but as with any family, you know, no one's perfect. But that's where we're at the moment. In terms of me and my dad.
So one thing that was obvious pretty much from the first time that I met you is your love for your family and your boys. How did fatherhood change you?
Man. Any father will attest to this. I tell every young father, like, you don't know until your child is born the feeling. Any new dads out there would understand this. It's a different feeling. It's almost like it's an extension of who you are, the love that you feel for your child. Like, I don't know. Like I said, you can't understand it until you've gone through it. So all the dads understand. When you have your first child, the love that you feel, it's a different kind of love. Oh, there he is. So Spencer was in ICU here. He was a prem baby. And this was like the second day he was born, on tubes and stuff. He was fine, but he's just early. But the love that I felt for my child was, I've never felt it before, and no one will experience it until you have your own. And every young father I talk to, I'm like, watch this. When you have your child, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. So you'll think back to this moment that we're having right now and understand, like, oh, wow, like he was you. And when I had my son, quick one, like another story is, like, God showed me what tangible love felt like. So I'm we got a yarn. You want a yarn? We're prepped. I've got a playlist ready to go, like a baby boy playlist. You know, it's hype music. Mags and I have our hype music. We know it's she's going to have a C-section. It's emergency C-section, so we go in. I got my hype music. I hadn't really slept because I'm excited, but also then I take a scoop of pre-workout. And I haven't really had pre-workout before, but I've, you know, and I didn't drink coffee at this time. So I take pre-workout. Boom, I'm hyped. We're going into late. Like, she's doing her thing. They're like it's all happening. It's all go. They cut her open. I'm like up here and the cutting here. And I look and I'm like, holy heck, what's happening? And the music's going and it's hype. And then I'm like, you know, I'm pretty pumped from pre-workout, but not realizing then adrenaline is kicked in as well. And I'm like, it's all go. We're on here. I'm going to have my child. I can see the purple alien thing coming out. And I'm like, oh, what the heck? It looks like a baby gorilla because it's got lots of hair. I'm like, oh. So then they bring him up. And they're yanking Mags too. Like, she's like this. And I'm like, what are you doing to my wife? Everyone's like, oh. Anyway, so I'm hyped. And then it's happened. And then son comes out. And they're like, oh, my heart's racing, and I'm just like, the music's going, and it's awesome. It's such a good time. Mags is like, you know. So it's just me and the baby. And then they're like, do you want to touch him? And I'm like, oh, yeah. Like, oh, yeah. Because they got to wipe him and stuff, you know. And he's like, so he's tiny, and he's on his front. So they've got him in his hand like that. Oh, two hands. And they pull him out, and they're like, oh, you know, cut the cord. They wipe him down a bit and they put him onto the table and they're like, oh, you want to touch him? And they grab my hand. Oh, put out your hand. They grab my hand and they go, boom, like straight away. As soon as I put my hand on my son, it's like a warmth goes through my hand up into my body. And I even feel it now. Like, the first time I understood what love tangibly felt like. And, you know, I'm hyped, but I get calm. I'm like, what is happening? Like, this is amazing. And God is like, no voice, but the idea, God says to me, the love that you feel for your son is how I love you as my child.
Wow.
And that's when I knew, because, you know, like, everyone will feel this in your faith journey, like, God, are you actually, or, you know, like, and that was the dead set honest truth of when God, I knew God was real. And his tangible love, that's what it felt like. I knew what love felt like. And it was a warmth. It was like if the sun could shine through your body, that's what it felt like. If light could shine through into your body, that's what it felt like.
Amazing.
The first time. And then I didn't feel like with Jalen because he's probably a bit crazy. But, but that's the yarn of when Spence was born. But, yeah, man, I'm just – yeah, blown away. That's God showed me love, so.
Awesome.
Yeah.
What's maybe one thing that's important to you as a dad?
Oh man, probably understanding that it's caught and not taught. You know, like, you want to set a great example, you know, for your kids. You can say all the things you want, but they'll follow in what you do. You know, actions will always speak louder than words. Because I'm a boy dad too, I feel like I'm probably a bit on the harder side. You know, for girl dads, I understand it's a bit different, but it's still cool. And I do understand that you have that, you need to have a gentle side as well as a dad. But definitely things are caught, you know, and not taught. You can teach as much as you want, and that's great. But they will only ever learn through what you do, you know? So, oh, yeah, there you go. Good photo of that.
Yeah. So you get to interact with a lot of young men. Yeah. What are you kind of noticing as some themes that or some common things that are facing young men at the moment?
Oh, probably social skills is one in terms of our young men, like – dealing with how to talk to people, you know, like, let's talk about dating, for example. I don't know because I'm not on the scene. I've been out the market for a long time, you know. But dealing with, like, dating, like, man, dudes don't know how to talk to girls, eh? Like, and it's, I think, because of social media or, like, technology, and that's fine. Like, it's just the way the world is working. But I feel like it's that's a common thing. And I think as men, we need to teach our next generation how to speak and, just life skills, really.
Yeah.
That's one thing for our young men. And just confidence in themselves and identity is another. You know, because of the social media world that we live in and a lot of things, you know, there's a lot of fake out there. I drive my social media quite hard, but only because I want to see, I just imagine my son later in life when he has it or if he'll have it, what he'll see. And if he sees stuff that I'm putting out on there in terms of being a dad, being real, you know, being a professional athlete, just the struggles, you know, go through, stuff like that. It's just a bit of realness, like, whereas there's a lot of things out there, fake abs and all that stuff, you know. Dad bods are the real bods, man.
Amen.
Yeah. I guess that's what comes to mind. Yeah. With our young people. Yeah.
Yeah.
Final thing for us today. What is one thing you would say to encourage men? Maybe those that are listening here and also on the podcast.
Yeah. A couple things. I think scripture is important because it's God's word, you know. You know, I learned discipline early in my life. In Hebrews 12:11, it says, no discipline seems pleasant at the time, but painful. But later, oh, here we go, produces a harvest of righteousness and peace by those who have been trained by it. And that's applicable in life, you know, as a dad, as a husband, you know, as a brother and as a friend, the more disciplined we are in life, the better we are at controlling how we move in this tough world. Because it is tough. As men, we think all these thoughts, are we good enough? Especially as a dad, no, constantly I'm thinking, am I good enough? Am I too hard on my kids? You know, do they love me the way that I love them? Like, am I showing them the right way? Like, am I setting a good example? I'm always thinking these thoughts internally, but I feel like the discipline in our lives gives us that structure. Discipline in terms of not waking up at 5 a.m., 4 a.m. in the morning, not that kind of discipline. The discipline in terms of if you're going to say something, do it. Like, if you're going to say, I'm going to be with you at bedtime to read your story, then follow through. You know, being showing your attention, where your attention is. You know, where's your attention as a dad or as a man? That's important. And then another thing is, I think in Luke 6:45, yeah, we got that. Yeah, a good man brings good things out of the good stored up in his heart. An evil man brings out, has evil things in his heart. And then, for the mouth speaks what the heart is full of. And I feel like we need to speak life. Like, that is key as men. Like, we are the ones that shape the future of whoever is around us. Like, speak life. Like, that is one thing that we can control. How you speak, what you're speaking. Those are two things that you can do. And this is not just for men, but for women too. Like, what are you speaking over yourself? Like, you might see yourself as something else, but what are you telling yourself? What are you speaking over yourself? What's the word saying about you? But I go back to the scripture because, you know, like I said before, as men, we think these things, we feel these things, but what's genuinely in our heart? What are we filling our heart up with? Because that's what will overflow. When you get angry and frustrated at your kids, what's going to overflow or take over? When you're angry at your boss, or, you know, you're not getting the promotion, what's genuinely going to take over? Is it going to be a sense of gratitude deep within, or is it going to be a sense of resent that someone else got the job instead of you? Instead of, oh, thanks, I still have a job. You know, that's a huge thing. But I'm a strong believer in what you have to speak life. There is power in the tongue. There's life and death in the tongue, right? So what you speak, so I speak over my boys. I speak over my marriage. I speak over my life. Speak over myself. Speak over my pastors. Like, it's important. Speak over my table. Like I said before, it's important. You know, my ministry, going back to your values, and I can get into, I'm passionate about these things, but that's the main thing. Because you must speak life. It's so important, especially when the world is telling you all these things. Social media is telling you all these things. It's telling your kids all these things. TV, YouTube, all this stuff. It's telling them blah, 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 whatever. And you have a lot of control, but we can't control what's in the world, but you can control what you speak, what is in your household. What is in your friend group? How you're speaking over your friends. They're going through a tough time. Speak life from that genuine place, you know, out of the goodness of your heart.
Yeah.
Speak life.
Yeah.
Oh, we're preaching now.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not a preacher or a pastor, just a FYI. Disclaimer, disclaimer.
Yet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, we want to thank Jeffrey. Why don't you?
Oh, thank you.
Just stay there for a moment. Just as we close, I wonder what particularly there might be a thought or something that's really encouraged you today. One of the things that I was encouraged by was that you had a friend called Levi. Yeah. I actually ran into him 2 weeks ago, just out of the blue at a conference. And I love the fact that he stayed connected with you. And as I was kind of hearing that, I thought, oh, who could I do that for? And maybe that's, I love the idea of speaking life. I love the idea of drawing that line in the sand about who you are going to be in any situation or circumstance. So thank you so much for that.
Thank you so much for joining us. We hope this message has inspired you to follow Jesus. You can find out more about City Lights, how you can connect, or how you could give into the mission of this church at city-lights.church.